You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This is your host, Hank Boyer, with my co-host, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance Group, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel, Deneo Thompson, also of Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel, Peter Snelling of Merrill Lynch, and Denise Lance of Attentive Health. We've got a terrific lineup of guests for you today. Christine, who do we have?
Yeah, we have a great show. We have Bob McGowan, COO of Peddlers Village Partnership, Brian Cohen, President and CEO of Inner Community Action, Inc., Gordon May, President and CEO of Concern, and Dr. Dolev Raffaelli, President and CEO of Strata Skin Sciences.
Terrific. Thank you, Christine. And our first guest is Bob McGowan, COO of Peddlers Village. Welcome, Bob. What is Peddlers Village Partnership?
Great to be here, Hank. Peddlers Village is a 42-acre colonial village in beautiful Bucks County. We have over 60 stores and shops and nine restaurants and eateries.
How many employees in the organization?
About 350.
And how did you get started there?
Well, I've spent the last 35 years in the hospitality business, running a couple of hotels up in King of Prussia. I was fortunate to meet a gentleman who was on the board of Peddlers Village, and when the COO opportunity presented itself, he came to me and I accepted it.
Excellent. So let's go back in time. You grew up in the Olney section, in fact, a big family. Tell us a little bit about those growing up years. What was it like?
They're probably the most impactful years of my life. It was great. We lived in a three-bedroom row house. There were 11 of us with my parents. So my three oldest sisters were in one bedroom, my parents in one, and then myself and my five brothers in another bedroom.
How does growing up in that chaos help in your career today?
That's a good question. I think everything that I do in my career really goes back to the early years. You really have to be in it to understand it. It didn't feel like chaos at the time. It felt like that's the way it was. We didn't have a whole lot, but we didn't want for anything. We're all very close as a family. We were then, and we are now.
Peter? You talked a little bit in the green room about sharing a room with five of your brothers and that unscripted environment where, of course, there's love of each other and how you resolve conflicts, and now you're in this working environment with many people for whom maybe love's not the word, but you all have to work out for the common good.
Absolutely. Back as kids, we worked it out one way or another. Sometimes it was physical, sometimes it wasn't. But nowadays, what I realized then is, you really have to be conscientious, and compassionate to others. And we learned that in a very small, environment in Olney. And, as I grow up, I continue to do that with, where I work and the people that I work with.
Bob, you mentioned in the green room that your father was one of your role models. Tell us a little bit about Mom and Dad. What did they do?
Absolutely. My parents were really my heroes. My father, for the fact that he had nine children he was providing for, went out to work every day, came back at 5 o'clock. My mom is a hero for managing the home. Like I said before, we didn't have a whole lot, but we didn't want for anything. When we had dinner at 5 o'clock, you came in at 5 o'clock.
Bob, interestingly, you also described that your house was like a little microcosm of what you do today, and you worked in the hotel industry, like a village and Peddler's Village. Is there a connection there?
To be honest with you, I didn't really think about that until this morning. I guess there is. I think my career choice is probably a result of how I grew up.
Bob, how young were you when you wanted to start making people feel at home?
I think as one of the, what my folks called us, the little guys, because I had three older sisters, three older brothers, and then it was myself and two younger brothers. So I realized at an early age, what it took to, manage in that environment. And so when I moved out, I bought a house, but, I guess I didn't want to be alone. So I rented two of the bedrooms to friends of mine. And then I bought another house, and I did the same thing until I got married. So I've never really been alone.
But you had, as part of that family chaos, you had an event happen at 13. You up and moved from the neighborhood. Tell us about that.
I did. I had a lot of good friends in Olney, and I went 7 years at the elementary school. And so when my parents told us we were moving, it was difficult for me because I was moving to Bucks County, to Holland, which was, we called it the country when we lived in the city. You know, and I was worried that, you know, I was going to have friends and, you know, things were going to be difficult.
So how do you handle the issue of change with the people that you're serving there at Peddler's Village? Because you've gone through it.
Well, I think going back to when I was 13, my parents said, look, everything's going to be fine. It's going to work out. You're going to have friends. You know, I think initially I didn't believe them, but as it turned out, I still hang out with three or four guys that I went to eighth grade with. So I think in business, you know, I really looked at any challenges I have. That was a really significant challenge for me at a young age. And so I don't find anything that I deal with now more challenging than that was.
Bob, you mentioned that in Peddler's Village you have a lot of people going in different directions and your job is to kind of keep them moving toward a common goal. Tell us about that.
We do. We have it's really a diverse workforce. We have people that are, you know, we have youngsters, teenagers, up to folks in their 70s working for us. You know, and the single goal really in a place like Peddler's Village is to make sure that the guests are happy. And in order to do that, you have to make sure your staff is happy. So what we've done and are doing is really developing the culture at Peddler's Village.
Are you apprenticing these young people in some way?
We do. We have a number of general managers that run our businesses, and we have training programs for all of the young folks. We want to try to develop a continuous stream of employees because, you know, with
Take us back, because I think the listening audience might appreciate that. Why you moved when you were 13? Tell us why you moved. Why Dad and Mom moved you?
I think at that time in 1972, I believe it was, my oldest sister was about 20, and then we're all a year apart, down to the, you know, the youngest, and he was 4 years younger. But if you can imagine being in that size home, we only had one bathroom, so with the girls and the guys getting older, we needed more space.
And what your dad, you said he started his own business, went
right
out in mid-40s and became an entrepreneur.
That's correct. He was in the title insurance business, and he worked for a big title insurance company. But I think he realized that in order for us to move, he needed to make more money.
You saw that as very gutsy, didn't you?
It's the gutsiest thing I've seen in my life, because he took a lot of risk and had nothing but to fall back on.
Did he have training programs? Did he have general managers helping him? Did he have people like that you have at Peddler's Village, or did he do it on his own?
He did it on his own. I mean, he had some really fine folks that were working with him, in a particular in an office, and he basically decided that because he had all the contacts and he had all the connections that he would do it at that time.
Denise?
Bob, what about that entrepreneurial spirit that your dad had? What's the connection that you see between that and the work you do now?
Well, at the Village, we have over 60 retail stores and shops. We have a brew pub. We have a spirit store. We have a ice cream store, a candy store. All of the folks that run those businesses are entrepreneurs. They are, and so my goal is to help them succeed. And as I watch them and the hard work they do, it reminds me of my father and what he did.
And what's at stake? There's quite a lot at stake for these business owners, as there was for your dad. They have people relying on them, and their businesses are imperative, I would imagine, to make it.
I don't think it's any different than my father's situation with us. You know, they all have children or grandchildren.
So what does it mean to you that you can provide that and help them build their businesses as part of what you do?
I think it's one of the most important things that I do at the Village. It's that, and it's also developing the younger staff to hopefully move into this business as a career and move on.
Bob, tell us about what your kids have learned from your parents and your life. What lessons have you imparted to them?
Well, my kids, I have two. I have a son who's 19 and daughter who's 17. So I didn't go quite as big as my parents did on the kid front. But they know what the importance of family is, because when we get together, when I get together with my siblings, they're there. And it's, you know, we have a little family gathering. It's 40 people.
Must be quite a party.
It is.
Bob, what's the best part of your day?
You know, I get in early. You know, I like to get ahead on things. I like to walk the village. If you've been up to Peddler's Village in the morning, it's really serene. It's beautiful Bucks County.
Not like that chaos you had growing up.
It's not. It's one time really in my life that I walk around, you know, alone.
So what's that website address?
It's peddlersvillage.com.
Give it to us again.
Peddlersvillage.com.
We've been speaking with Bob McGowan, COO of Peddler's Village Partnership. Don't forget to visit executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Hank Boyer, and we'd like to introduce you to our next guest, Brian Cohen, President and CEO of Inner Community Action. Welcome, Brian. What is Inner Community Action?
Thank you for having me today. Inner Community Action is a community behavioral health center. We're located in the Roxborough section of Philadelphia, and we provide services in the areas of mental health, drug and alcohol, intellectual and developmental disabilities, and we also have a program for the elderly.
Great. How large or how small is the organization?
We employ around 250 people, and it's around a $20 million budget.
Great. And how did you get started there?
I got started there over 25 years ago. I'm a psychologist by training, and I got started as the children's outpatient supervisor.
So you grew up in Northeast Philadelphia. Whereabouts?
Well, it's called Oxford Circle. It grew up around Busselton and Cotman, and right
what impact did that? What impact did that have on you growing up in that section of Philly?
Well, when I grew up, it was a very homogeneous, let's say, section of Philadelphia. So there wasn't a lot of diversity, and I think that had an impact on me.
And you had brothers and sisters?
Yes, sir. I have an older brother, older sister, and a younger sister.
And growing up, third of four?
Yes, sir.
What impact did that have on you?
I think the biggest impact was that in some ways my sister did very well in school, got all A's. My brother was, he might listen to this, he was kind of a mess up in school. And so me being third, it was easy. I just wasn't going to be as smart as my sister or as, as bad as my brother. So
that's the benefit of being number three. So you grew up in a neighborhood in Philadelphia. What did you guys do for fun?
Most of my time was spent at a place called Max Meyer's Playground. We played baseball, softball, basketball. If not, we would just go out in the street and play in front of our houses.
Denise?
So tell us a little bit about your parents. What did your mom do? What did your dad do?
My mom was from New York, and she came to Philadelphia right when she got married in her early 20s, and she was a social worker, and my father was an attorney.
Okay. And when we talked about them earlier, you talked about some of the values that you inherited from them. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I talked about diversity. I remember a time when I was young that I invited a friend over to our neighborhood, and he was an African-American friend, and he was riding a bike in our backyard, and the neighbors called the police. And it was unusual to see someone of color in our neighborhood, and it had a big impact on me, and my parents really were upset about that, and the way they reacted to that really impacted me.
So you talked about your dad really had values around justice and your mom around equal rights, and it sounds like they both appreciated diversity and the human spirit.
Yeah, they were both kind of sort of ex-hippies or hippies and part of what was called at the time the human potential movement. So they were very much into encounter groups and who knows what.
And you think that influenced you?
I'm sure it influenced me.
Brian, I want to take you back to your days on the streets in the neighborhood when you were growing up. What games did you play, and what was your role in the neighborhood?
Well, my favorite game was wiffle ball. So wiffle ball, the street was perfect. You hit a home run, meaning you hit the houses. And we also had at least 30 or 40 children on our street, so we would play football in the middle of the street, and we would all just play whatever role we wanted to.
Did you pick teams when you were a kid?
Yeah, we often... that was the way it was. It was like a treacherous moment when you're picking teams, or you're going to get chosen, or hopefully you're the one picking the teams.
Where did you get picked?
It depended on the game. I know in the playground I was usually last when it came for basketball because I was usually the youngest.
Why were you playing in a group where you were the youngest?
I wanted to hang out with my brother's friends, and it was more challenging to play against the big guys and try to get as good as they are.
I want to go back to Max Myers Park, where you said the very best part of that was that there were no parents anywhere around. And not that meant you guys were misbehaving, but that as kids you were figuring out how each person played in the team and then translating that into your work and finding the redemption of every person, right?
Yeah, that's excellent. As you said that, I just... didn't even realize my older son is named Maxwell, so I don't know if there's a connection there between where I spent my childhood and naming my son that. But it was a lot different. As a parent, I took my child to every game, and their parents were always there. So to grow up without parents around and to be able to work things out, sometimes you fought, but most of the time, well, if you fought, the next day you're out there like it didn't happen anyway. So you just learn how to resolve things.
Brian, how young were you when you started noticing things other people didn't notice? You said, I think, that you were a sensitive kid, not always easy, but you saw a lot in people. The things you're describing and that impacted you were significant.
I know from a very young age I was fairly sensitive and in a way that it wasn't necessarily pleasant. I just saw the world very simply, and I didn't understand why people... weren't just nice to each other.
So how do you use that to make a difference in the work that you're doing today?
You know, I heard this poem a while ago by Rumi. It said, let the beauty you are be what you do. So I just try to be who I am in whatever situation I'm in.
You described when you were younger you had a mentor. Can you tell us about him?
There was a gentleman, I was 18, and he hired me to work in a group home. And people can't see me, but I don't have much hair. So back then, I had very long hair and a beard, and he hired me on the spot. And he saw something in me that I wasn't able to recognize in myself at that time.
What did that do for you and for your life?
Well, I didn't know at 18 I was making a career path goal or decision. But since that time, I have worked with children or worked in the social service agencies.
Tell us about your first job. How young were you, and what did you do?
I guess the first job I had making money was probably just shoveling walks. And growing up in Northeast Philadelphia, every street probably had 50 walkways. I mean, they were all about 10 feet long, but they seemed long to me.
And how was who you are? How did who you are and how you were impact how you did that job?
You know, I hate to say this, I'm really not much of a hustler. So I just kind of let myself be who I am and see what unfolds from that.
So your parents were immigrants, and your grandparents, and your parents introduced you to the human potential movement. What lessons do you have from the human potential movement that you hold dear today?
Well, it actually ties in very well with the tagline for our agency, which is we're called Inner Community Action, and that everybody deserves a fulfilling life. And I think that's really what the human potential movement was about. Was about wherever you are in life, you can move forward and you can take the next step.
If you could go back and give your 16-year-old self a great piece of advice, what would that be?
Don't worry, everything's going to work out.
Really? Tell us more.
I tend to have a fear of the future, and any time and anything that I've faced in my life I've been able to manage, it's just really hard to manage it in the imagination.
So what would you have us take away from that as it relates to your current role, this facing of fear?
Well, when you work in an agency, we support people with disabilities, with drug and alcohol issues, so there are deaths, there are suicides, that things are going to happen. And that my job is to be prepared to respond to things as and when they happen,
Brian,
and that I really can't prevent everything.
What's your website?
intercommunityaction.org.
We've been speaking with Brian Cohen, President and CEO of Inner Community Action, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be right back after this break. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Hank Boyer, and we'd like to introduce you to Gordon May, President and CEO of Concern for Kids. What's Concern for Kids? What do they do?
Concern for Kids is a human service organization. We provide foster care, adoption, behavioral health services, which is essentially therapy, psychology, and psychiatric services.
How large or how small?
We have about 450 employees and a little over $20 million revenue.
And how did you get started there?
I started about 2 years ago, but I've been in human services essentially my whole life. I was just happened to be looking for a job, came from a great company where I was at 17, 18 years, saw the foster care adoption, which I haven't worked with, and that holds a special place in my heart, and I kind of saw the job and knew it was for me.
So that foster care adoption held a special place for your heart. So you grew up in Mechanicsburg. Tell us a little bit about your experience growing up.
Well, at a very young age, I was legally adopted by my grandparents, and I didn't know at the time, but and even not till a later age, I was in foster care at an early age. But then my parents, like I said, my grandparents legally adopted me, and I grew up with both my grandfather and my grandmother.
How does growing up in foster care help you empathize with people that are going through that very same thing?
I don't know if I grew up in foster care, but I had that experience, and like I said, I learned that. But just being so fortunate to be where I'm at today, I think I know how important it is for somebody to have access to that.
Great. Joe?
You cited your grandfather as a primary role model growing up, and I think you used the word stoic to describe him. He was a truck driver. Sounded like he had enough wisdom to know that you were okay and maybe was more of a guide than somebody who would transfer a sense of less than in you.
Yeah, I mean, he led by example, not much emotion, which is very weird considering my field I've chosen, but he worked his butt off. He was my hero. I watched him. He would drive truck, come home, and work in the garden. The man worked nonstop and provided for me, so I really looked up for that.
Christine.
Yeah, you know, you should kind of have gone through some tough times in your life. Did you end up in trouble when you were a kid?
I didn't get in big trouble. I knew the kind of trouble that was okay versus the kind of trouble that was really going to get me in trouble.
So why, who surrounded you and how did you not get into trouble?
I had a lot of great friends growing up from a young age, the neighborhood kids, seeing their more traditional families, which I really didn't have. And I kind of had that support, not only in the neighborhood with the families, but also the school district and some very special teachers and people I had in my life.
You said in the green room that people would reach out and ask if you were okay, check in on you, make sure that they were there for you, that you felt that constantly throughout your childhood. What difference did that make?
It made a huge difference. At the time, I thought they were annoying me. And I remember them asking, why are people keep asking me this? But they wanted to make sure I had what I needed to be successful. And I think some people probably saw something in me.
What does that have to do with what you do on a daily basis?
I think really giving back, to know that if I wouldn't have had those supports, that help, who knows where I'd be today. I really do believe that because of that support, I am where I am at today. And I've always wanted to give back and do more.
Why did your grandparents adopt you? Where was mom? You said she was ill?
Yeah, my mom actually had schizophrenia. When at a very young age, she was in and out of the hospital. I remember going, but we really didn't talk about it. So I do remember that.
Gordon, did you play a lot of sports growing up?
I did. I played baseball and football all the time.
And tell me, were there other people involved in helping you get to those sporting events?
Yeah, it goes back to families. I had particular families that I played sports with all my life, who I'm still really good friends with. They would drive me to and from, were always with me. I was interacted with their families, ate dinners, and they were really a support because obviously my grandfather drove a truck, and I definitely needed help.
And the sports team, what role did you play on each one of the teams?
I think a leadership role. I was pretty good. I ended up playing in college. So more lead by example. I wasn't a very verbal rah-rah guy, but I always worked hard and leading by example.
How does that translate into how you lead today?
I think it has transcended very well. I you know, continuously always work hard. Those sports instilled in me that work ethic, and working side by side people and always being involved as a team. It's a group effort, and I really try to do that today.
So for you, it's more example than what you say.
Exactly.
Denise. So,
One of the things we talked about earlier was that you mentioned how fortunate you were at a young age, but you actually recognized at a young age, even as early as high school, how fortunate you were. And I find that rare. I think a lot of people don't get there till later in life. How do you try to pay that particular insight forward to other people? How do you help them realize what's fortunate in their lives?
I don't think you really know at the time. Like you have to know what the opportunities given to you. And I really try to discuss and have people think about, regardless of your situation, you have opportunities presented in front of you, and you've got to take advantage of those,
Gordon,
when you're faced with them.
Some would say that your non-traditional childhood was disadvantaged, yet you say that any kid that has what I had has what I had will make it. Tell us what you meant by that. What does that mean?
I grew up with my grandparents. Hundreds of thousands of kids are growing up with their grandparents today. I think having those supports and not realizing in your situation, I did realize what I had, but and everybody asked me and thought it was different, and I really didn't think it
was.
Can
your organization teach that? Is that a teachable skill?
Exactly. I do think it's a teachable skill. We have kids in foster homes, people who open up their homes to disadvantaged youth, and they get to provide that very same thing that I had through all those families and friends growing up that led to me being successful.
Do you get to interact with the kids in your day-to-day job?
I do. I just went to, we have a group home, and I just went to a whitewater rafting trip with 20 kids from the city, and it was awesome day. So I actually don't get to do that as often, but I try to get to events as much as I can, interact with the youth, because I love to see that. It's a great experience, and to see the look on their on their eyes.
What about Grandma? You said Grandpa was your hero. What about her?
Grandma was there and always provided. So she was the disciplinarian. One would maybe say mean, and I look back on it, I probably wasn't as nice to her as I should have been. She passed away when I was a sophomore in high school. But she really did raise me, and was the disciplinarian, and she would like to say I drove her batty.
What lessons did she teach you that you feel you bring to your organization?
I think that she worked hard as well, and I think just that the parenting, the ownership, the being a part of something and knowing how involved she was.
So you're a parent yourself today. You've got two daughters. How does Grandma's parenting of you translate to how you parent to your children today?
They drive me batty too, so I guess that's passed on. I really do think, I think the side of me that is caring, disciplinarian, and really wants to do a good job and really provide, because that's what she did. I mean, she was there for me. I just don't know.
Gordon, you said, and I want to just talk about Grandpa some more. You said he's your hero. Why was he your hero?
I just looked up to him because I knew everything he was doing. Like I said, he drove truck. I did at a very young age. I went on trips with him to Texas over the summer, where I remember being in a car for 7 days and driving down and hiding in the back because we weren't supposed to have me. But he brought me, so I got to see that. It was a great experience. And being in Texas with no air conditioning in a truck with 110 degrees at night and being 6 years old.
Did you see him making sacrifices so that he could raise you?
He really provided. So when I mean he did everything he could for me, my family, when I say my family, my grandma, myself, and my mom.
So as the CEO of Concern, I'm sure that it's not the highest paying job, that you're not there for the money, right? Like Grandpa. So what's the giving back, and how's that your currency? How does that make you happy?
So we do a lot of development. I did direct service for a long time, got pulled on the admin side, but I develop new programs. So the more programs I open, the more things I develop, the more kids we serve, the more I'm giving back. So when I look at development, I kind of transcended my career into doing more, because if we're providing more service, I'm growing new programs, opening stuff, we're providing more services.
You can't touch enough lives, can
exactly.
you?
Exactly.
So I want to get back to your daughters. What are their names?
Sydney and Kylie.
And what are you learning from Sydney that helps you be a better president and CEO?
She's a wonderful kid, happy-go-lucky, and no matter what, with her softball career in school, she always puts a smile on her face and does her best at everything she does, even at 11 years old, which is pretty awesome.
And what does your youngest daughter teach you about being a better president and CEO?
That sometimes when life is hard, you're going to struggle a little bit, and that's okay, and then you bounce back and you get back on your horse.
So what do you tell the kids that you're serving right now about those issues of struggling? You've got your own experience and your children's experience. What do you tell the kids?
No matter how bad or worse you think your situation is, there's going to be opportunities given to you and people around you that are successful and want to see you succeed. Don't be scared to ask for help. Don't be scared to accept help. I think so many kids push help away, and I don't know exactly why, but they shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. And when people are asking and caring, accept their help, and it will definitely help you in the future.
What do the adults that went through your program earlier have to say about your organization?
They're awesome. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have the founders of the company. It's 40 years old this year. We're having a 40th this Saturday. They started it. So I want to carry on what they did for 40 years to build such a solid organization with such a great mission.
That's
I'm
great.
Indebted to them.
What is your website?
It's concern4kids.org.
We've been speaking with Gordon May, President and CEO of Concern for Kids. And don't forget to listen to executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be right back after this break. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Hank Boyer, with my co-host, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance Group, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer Redman, Maxwell and Hipple, Danao Thompson, Obermeyer Redman, Maxwell and Hipple, Peter Snelling of Merrill Lynch, and Denise Lance of Attentive Health Solutions. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Dolev Raffaelli, President and CEO of Strata Skin Sciences. Dolev, welcome, and tell us what Strata Skin Sciences is all about. What do you guys do?
Happy to be here. Strata Skin Sciences is a medical device technology company in the dermatology space. We're very unique in the fact that we provide the technology and put it in the physician's hands free of charge and charge a fee per use. We deliver the patients. We advertise, we bring the awareness up, and we drive the patients all the way to the clinics, both domestically as well as in other countries.
Terrific. And how large or how small is the organization today?
The company is public. It's it has about $30 million of sales, growing up very fast. It has a market cap of over $120 million, and it has about 100 employees. However, it impacts thousands of providers in the clinics where we provide the technology.
You've got a rather interesting history with the organization. You've been the leading shareholder not once but twice.
Correct. Back in 2011, I merged a private company that was growing very fast in the dermatology space, both selling to physicians as well as selling to consumers domestically and globally, into a public company that owned this business, and became the largest shareholder of a public company that had this business. Later on in 2015, 3 years later, this business grew very fast, and we ended up selling it to what is today Strata Skin Sciences.
And so you grew up in Israel. Tell us a little bit about that experience. How did that impact you?
It's much farther away from here than all the other guests we had in this show. It's different.
Your commute was long.
Yes, it's different. It's a different country. It's a smaller country, very, very condensed. A lot of people know each other. Much smaller population, more homogenic than the population here. And it drove a lot of expectations in growing up.
That's an interesting thing. It drove a lot of expectations. Mom and Dad, what did they do for a living?
My dad founded Haifa University, which was one of the five universities in Israel. He started this just when I was born, and he grew it to be one of the finest institutions there. My mom had a double PhD, and she taught in medical school for all these years, and then she retired and moved on to do another career in computers.
So high expectations, even in terms of your parents' achievements. They accomplished a lot in their lives.
Indeed, yes.
This show focuses a lot on the formative years and how they make you into the person and the role you're in your organization today. Those parents taught you how to dream, did they not?
Indeed. They taught me how to dream. They taught me how to come up with what I want to do, not what they wanted me to do, and to realize that and push it forward.
Yeah, you mentioned having an engineering background that never kind of culminated in doing work as an engineer, but in the green room, you referenced kind of this building companies as basically being dream-driven. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that coming up with a dream and forming it and putting up a target that's way beyond the reach and trying to get there is a way to get results that are much farther than what we expected.
Tell us about your first job.
My first job was cleaning places. I was making up some money for pocket change.
Did you get paid well for that job?
Amazingly well. This is what brought me all the way up to here, I guess.
You actually said that your parents matched what you were paid, right?
My parents had a practice where if I wanted to achieve something, I should pay part of it and they will match my money. So I had to go out and work.
And then what was your second job?
My second job was boring. I worked in a factory in an assembly line. But it paid well for my targets at the time.
Dolev, you're somewhat reluctant to talk about yourself, and I just want to ask you, what makes you different than every other young person listening to our show today that has a dream? How can you encourage them?
I believe things are achievable. I believe that if you want to do something, it will happen, and challenges are there just in your dreams. It's not real. You can achieve that.
So you mentioned earlier, look, listen, but don't copy is one of your mantras. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What makes something different?
When you make up your dream and you move forward, you look at what other people do in the space where you operate. I can give up examples from what we do today, but we could not have achieved what we do today if we were copying what other people do, what other companies do, because nobody does what we do, and we're the first ones, we're the only ones. We came up with the platform, and we're pushing it forward.
Is it pretty unique that you actually service the patients by taking them to the facilities as well? Is that part of that uniqueness, that you're providing service as well as technology?
The uniqueness is that we provide the whole chain. We create the awareness, we get the patients involved, and we drive them all the way to the physicians. We help the physicians build up their own business. Otherwise, they would be limited to their own circle of patients.
What sports or activities did you do while growing up in Israel?
I grew up sailing, and then later on took on scuba diving.
And what impact did that have on you?
I think both sports make you do things to your extreme on the one hand, but on the other hand, they're not team sports. You're not in a specific position. And if you do right and your partner is doing right, then you're going to be okay.
So professionally, you have really have experience in fixing and problem solving and being creative. What's an early memory that you have of doing that growing up?
Probably if I reflect on my career, it was always to fix up things. I came in and I got into things that nobody wanted to touch or nobody thought it could be possible to do, and somehow did not realize that this was the fact.
But as a young person, did you do that?
Yes. Also as a young person, when I started working and when I started right when I was in school, I started working in a solar energy company, and I took it to markets that did not exist before, only because probably I did not know it wasn't possible at the time.
Dolev, what's your website?
Strataskin.com.
We've been speaking with Dolev Raffaelli, president and CEO of Strata Skin Sciences. Christine, can you give us a quick rundown of who's been on the show today?
Sure. We had a great show. We had Bob McGowan, COO of Peddler's Village Partnership, Brian Cohen, president and CEO of Inner Community Action, Inc., Gordon May, president and CEO of Concern, and Dr. Dolev Raffaelli, president and CEO of Strata Skin Sciences.
I'd like to thank all of my co-hosts, Christine Miles, CIO Squared, Joe Reardon, Doyle Alliance Group, Matthew Shapiro, Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel, Dineo Thompson, Obermeyer, Redmond, Maxwell & Hippel, Peter Snelling of Merrill Lynch, and Denise Lance of Attentive Health Solutions for giving me a hand to help structure the questions and give our listening audience an entertaining and educational show. And I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today. Have a terrific day. Bye-bye.